Hi. I want to tell you how the cooking school is shaping up, and more specifically about the moment where I realized I didn't have to, and really shouldn't, go it alone. This is Zach Martinucci, and you're listening to Against the Grain. Last week, we talked about developing the sourdough class, just one of the classes on our schedule. To help give you a more complete picture of what Rebel Bread looks like these days, I'm going to tell you how the rest of the bread school is coming along. But we're starting way back with my very first cooking class in Denver, Make Gnocchi Like an Italian Grandmother. I first offered this class about a year ago now. I think it even came up as an update in the first season of this podcast, and I taught it in this rented workshop space with just a sink and a table. No stove, no dishes. I brought all of that down to the wine glasses. I very much consider the gnocchi class to be my first album. You know, often arguably an artist's best album, or at least the one that really speaks to who they are. This was, after all, the meal I used to make for and teach to my friends long before it became a class. The lesson includes stories from Italy and recipes that are both fundamental and experimental, traditional and intentionally non-traditional. It's based off of my knowledge from interviewing my network of Italian grandmothers via Facebook message, and I'd say has one of the best backstories of my classes. Look, the sourdough class is masterfully crafted and incredibly thoughtful, if I say so myself, but I'm not sure it has the same soul as the gnocchi class. And if I may, I think Make Gnocchi Like an Italian Grandmother speaks the most about me as an artist when I had all the time in the world to craft this one class before the fans demanded another album and I had to come up with new kinds of pasta. The evening ends with a non-traditional dessert pasta with an Italian-Jewish culinary history. I'm just going to tell it to you so you can make sense of how this all fits together. So we're at the point in the class where we've just made potato gnocchi dough from start to finish. We're a little over 2 hours in. I taught my simple, fundamental weeknight tomato sauce, as well as a really easy gorgonzola cream sauce with toasted walnuts, which is very traditional to serve with gnocchi. And then it's time for our dessert pasta. I melt a stick of butter in a pan, and I tell everyone that to that I'm going to add some cinnamon, some brown sugar, but you could use white sugar or honey if you wanted, and a little dash of cayenne. That's not traditional, but I like spicy sweet things. This will just be a little bit warm. And I'm going to leave the Parmigiano Reggiano cheese out, but I highly recommend you grate it on your own, because the classic version of this dish, macanod, is a Parmigiano cinnamon sugar sweet and savory pasta dish. So the story goes like this. I tell everyone that me and my sister are Jewish Italian. Our dad is Italian Catholic, our mom is Jewish, and so we were raised as cashews. Thank you, that always gets a laugh, although it's a real thing that people identify as. Although we're the first two in our family. Being a diasporic people, though, Jews have lived all over the world for a long time, and so there's a long history of Italian Jews, Jews living in Italy, that have a history just as Italian as it is Jewish. And in the mid-1500s, the papacy, that is, the Pope, issued a decree that banned Jews from living in Italian life in city centers, and that looked different from city to city. In some, like in Venice and in Rome, they were forced into ghettos. The word ghetto is the Italian word for iron foundry, the part of the town where they were forced to live in Venice once upon a time. And in some places, there were harsh restrictions and it was quite oppressive, and in others, while still oppressive, the Jewish community were still allowed to carry on their traditions and their community and their relationships just in a new, different part of town and under new regulations. Some parts of Italy, like throughout Tuscany, were not under papal decree, and so it was up to every city-state or city and the family that reigned there what they would do with the Jewish people. And some were quite favorable and became havens for Jewish communities to flock to. We know a lot about this one little hilltop Tuscan town called Pitigliano, which is known as Little Jerusalem. We know a lot about it from Edda Servimacquin, who was a resident there in the late 1800s and early 1900s, who wrote about the culture and a lot about the recipes as well. I should say that it's not that every Jew went to Pitigliano. There were something like 200 people there. And in Pitigliano, there was a kosher bakery and a mikveh, a ceremonial bath, and the Jewish people were allowed to continue about their lives as normal among the Italians, in what seemed like an otherwise pretty happy community. Now, of the recipes we get from there, and of Jewish-Italian recipes in general, we recognize them as being Jewish-Italian for a few modifications on what might otherwise be an Italian recipe. First, we look at things that are seasonal. either that they grew that time of year, or an ingredient that was associated with a particular Jewish holiday, like how we associate apples and honey with Rosh Hashanah. We find ingredients that are recognized as typically Jewish, usually because they originate in the South Mediterranean or North Africa in the Middle East, things like couscous and artichokes. Lastly, we recognize Jewishly influenced recipes because of their adherence to kosher laws, which simply put says no shellfish, no pork, and meat and dairy can't be mixed in the same meal. Now there's not much we know about makanod, the pasta dish we're making tonight. You can't really Wikipedia it, it doesn't come up on Google. It's one of the gems I consider to have found in my research reading through some of Eda Servi Makuin's writings. We know that it wasn't typically served with gnocchi, but it was a pasta dish, and it was served during Sukkot, the fall festival of the harvest and temporary dwellings, as a midnight snack. And that's important because my guess is that it was probably came about to adhere to the kosher rules, in that being a heavily dairy-based pasta sauce, it couldn't be served alongside a main meal, which would have included meat. And so instead, to enjoy this sweet pasta dessert, they served it at midnight, long after the recent meal, so that they could enjoy it during this fall festival. And I say to the class that I encourage you to think about any of the traditions we talked about tonight. And as you think about how you might make gnocchi into a new tradition in your own life, to appreciate the ways that something as simple as pasta can connect us all across cultures, communities, and generations. And then it's silent for a moment. They might clap, but they usually don't. And then someone inevitably says, "Oh, this was about more than just pasta." Or, "Oh, I had no idea everything you could learn from food." And then sometimes someone else says something like, "Oh, food anthropology." And that's the moment where I know that they got it. Because it was about more than just pasta. I want them to walk away both with a new recipe and technique, and also to be thinking in a new way about a dish that they already love. The gnocchi class is great because, maybe since it's my first album, I always get that moment. And so I work to build that moment into every one of our event experiences. And I consider finding or pulling out that moment out of new classes or events to be my most important task, and often the greatest challenge as the director of our cooking school program. It's a fun challenge, though, because perhaps the thing I love more than teaching is teaching other teachers to teach. It's rewarding to guide them to craft that moment into their own course, and then I get to experience it through them, multiplied across all the teachers now, not just my own one class or two. I find it's hard to get that moment, at least organically, if you're not really passionate about the subject. I've even been pressed to develop new classes quickly, and even if I can teach a new skill from a technical standpoint pretty well, it feels like it's missing something when I haven't put in the effort to pull out the story or connect what I care about in the recipes. I love teaching sourdough. That class is the foundation of all bread theory, or at least I teach it that way. And pasta, just out of a personal love for it. But I realized a few months ago that it was going to take some serious work to find a new thing I was just as passionate about and learn it well enough to be able to teach it. At the time, it hadn't occurred to me that by starting a bread school, it would probably make sense to work with multiple instructors. So it really felt like a pivot when this idea popped up. I'm not sure exactly where it started. I think I met Alana, one of our current instructors. She came to a bagel class I was leading. And I thought, wow, she would teach a great class. Maybe I should make some space for her to do that and see what she'd think about it. And then I started identifying others too. I gathered a small cohort of home and professional bakers with a story to share, whether or not they knew it, although most of them knew it. And I challenged them to come up with a thesis for their class. I think all good classes should have one. It doesn't have to ever be said out loud if they don't want to, but the idea is that the instructor is going to make some claim about the recipes they're teaching, or maybe their unique insight on the recipes. And then they'll spend the next few hours making some pastries, telling some stories, and trying to prove their thesis to be true. The students can agree or totally disagree, but either way, they're made to think a little bit about the lesson at hand. I say all of that nearly verbatim to my students, by the way. I like them to know what I'm trying to prove, what I believe about bread, and that they can totally refute me at the end if they want. I just want it to be thoughtful. So here's who I found for our classes. Alana and I met in a bagel class a few months ago. She's a food scientist and professional recipe tester by trade, and spends a lot of her free time experimenting with and perfecting her own recipes. Everything on her Instagram looks like it just won the Great British Baking Show. Like many of the instructors, there are a lot of classes I'm sure Alana could teach, and she's chosen to start with choux pastry. That's C-H-O-U-X if you're not familiar. It means cabbage in French because of the way the final dough looks. And it's the dough that we use to make cream puffs and eclairs and crullers and profiteroles and other things. So she set up the class to teach the science, in a very approachable way, behind making a successful choux pastry, and then shows just how versatile it is by piping the pastry into different shapes, filling and topping them with a wide variety of creams and glazes, and leaving her students with inspiration for even more ways they can take this new technique. Andrea found us, actually. She's a clinical psychologist by trade, and kind of a celebrity home baker in her home country of the Czech Republic. She works with all kinds of breads and pastries, we've tried a lot of them. And she teaches a class on bukti and kolače, two beloved, traditional, sweet Czech pastries made with the same rum-enriched dough. Her class is popular among both native Czechs who grew up eating their grandmother's bukti, and others who just love a good pastry. Andrea's class begins with a fairy tale, or maybe a fable. A bedtime story that every little Czech boy and girl knows about this guy, I think his name is Johnny No Luck or something like that, who just can't get it right in life. So one day, his mom sends him out into the world with nothing but a sack of bukti, our featured pastry, tied over his shoulder on a stick, and tells him not to come back till he gets a wife. Johnny has a good heart, and shares the pastries with this hermit he meets in his travels, and then the hermit turns out to be a wizard of some kind who grants him wishes. It's actually quite a long story, but in the end he marries a princess, and I guess the moral is that it all started with kindness and a sack of bukti, and that this might be the most quintessential Czech pastry. Ryan and I met through the coffee community in Denver, and became friends because people told us we both liked baking and that we should hang out. Ryan sources and mills his own local grains, and is teaching a class to highlight the unique characteristics of each flour. We make the Nestle Toll House chocolate chip cookie recipe and crackers. Two simple, familiar recipes that work like a science experiment, by allowing us to compare how the different flours behave and taste in each variation. Ryan loves both the story of how the grain gets to be flour and then a baked good, highlighting all the people it goes through along the way. And he speaks to the science behind the fermentation and the enzymatic activity. It all feels a little like Alton Brown is teaching the class, in the warmest, most nerdy way possible. Some things you might notice about this group. One, they're all quite different from one another. Yes, exactly. They also all teach and specialize in things that I would never have come up with on my own, or honestly wouldn't have done as good of a job with even if I saw the potential for that class. I realized here that not only do I not have to do this alone, I shouldn't. Look at the variety, the diversity, and excitement we get by giving others a voice and letting them take ownership of their own skills and stories. I think that's one of the points of being a community bakery, too. Two, it's not a very cohesive catalog. I mean, if I had been looking for a solid home baking school program, just four classes meant to be great for every home baker, I probably wouldn't have picked kolače and choux and heirloom grain cookies and sourdough. But these aren't the only classes, these are their classes. The ones that these particular instructors are best at telling, that they're meant to tell, and are most excited about doing so. Maybe it's their first album. And since we all have different tastes anyway, and come from different experiences, I'd rather our audience be able to pick the classes that are most exciting to them, knowing they'll learn new skills in any of the courses, rather than put everyone through the same program. Starting in just a few weeks, there'll be another cohort. At least, I'm putting out applications to join the next cohort. It's the fall cohort, actually. These things take time to develop and coach and produce. If we keep taking on a few new instructors, though, then 2 years from now, imagine what the calendar will look like, truly filled with classes for every kind of home baker, taught by numerous experts from our own community. I began by calling these teachers my guest instructors, but quickly realized that even if they're only with us for a season, they aren't just guests. They're everything we stand for about the baking community, a passion for baking, for sharing their recipes, and for educating aspiring bakers. And they bring stories and recipes we wouldn't be able to provide ourselves. I feel so fortunate to have them as part of our team, and so for all of that, they are the Bread School Instructors. There are a lot of different wheels turning inside Rebel Bread right now, and this is one of them, perhaps the one I'm most excited about. In the coming weeks, though, I'll continue to tell you about some of the other main, very different aspects of our business, so you can get an idea of how they all fit together, or maybe don't, and how they inform how we might continue to pivot the company. In other news, this week was really characterized by the beginning of a hiring process, our first open call as a bakery, actually, as we lost one of our star bakers, and the replacements I originally had in mind fell through. Aaron, my friend from a previous bakery job, then the sheriff of Danish Town, and the Lorax of Rebel Bread, is just irreplaceable. But I'm moving forward, looking to find not another Aaron, but someone else who will complement our team in an equally significant and diverse way. This was a really daunting task, and I drug my feet a little for the first week Aaron was gone before finally posting on Instagram to say we were hiring. But I forgot how much I love this kind of process. I love writing applications, and then reading what the applicants have to say, and then interviewing them in hopefully a thoughtful and easygoing way, and then introducing them to the team and giving them a chance to try out working in the bakery. In that moment of giving the candidate a tour before turning them over to production, I'm reminded of how proud I am of our team and the excellent work we do every day and the bakery we're building together. To be fair, I've always loved this role. I typically work in things that I feel passionate about, and so being the greeter or the tour guide means that I get to show off everything I love about the place. So it's been a fun week of that. We received more applications than I was expecting, have unfortunately had to turn down qualified people, and are in the process of hosting some working interviews so we can make a decision about our newest team member, hopefully by the end of next week. I love thinking about company culture throughout this process. Really, I just like culture in general. I studied anthropology, and my favorite anthro understanding of culture is the way we do things around here. So I consider it my job to find someone that would fit into the way we do things around here, and who I think might contribute some new perspective that will make us all excited about the new way we'll do things around here. Saturday, we put on an aperitivo for the soon-to-open Ottimo wine. I recorded this episode before then, actually, so I'll get back to you next week to let you know how it went. Next week, I'm teaching a new challah class right before Ryan teaches his heirloom grain class, and it's our final week to prepare for the farmer's market. All of that, and a look at another aspect of the current version of our bakery. Happy Sunday, happy Memorial Day weekend. I'll talk to you soon. This song was Come What May by The Tide Rose.